As he started to go to his father's, he turned round and added persuasively, "Let her be brought back, and she shall have her children to live with her." The tidings made the old doctor rave and storm at a furious rate. It was a busy day for them. My grandmother's house was searched from top to bottom. As my trunk was empty, they concluded I had taken my clothes with me. Before 10 o'clock, every vessel northward bound was thoroughly examined, and the law against harboring fugitives was read to all on board. At night, a watch was set over the town. Knowing how distressed my grandmother would be, I wanted to send her a message, but it could not be done. Everyone who went in or out of her house was closely watched. The doctor said he would take my children unless she became responsible for them, which of course she willingly did. The next day was spent in searching. Page 122. Before night, the following advertisement was posted at every corner and in every public place for miles around. $300 reward. Ran away from the subscriber, an intelligent, bright, mulatto girl named Linda, 21 years of age, 5 feet 4 inches high, dark eyes and black hair inclined to curl, but it can be made straight. Has a decayed spot on a front tooth. She can read and write, and in all probability will try to get to the free states. All persons are forbidden under penalty of law to harbor or employ said slave. $150 will be given to whoever takes her in the state, and $300 if taken out of state, and delivered to me or lodged in jail. Dr. Flint. Page 123. Starting Chapter 18. Months of Peril. The search for me was kept up with more perseverance than I had anticipated. I began to think that escape was impossible. I was in great anxiety lest I should implicate the friend who harbored me. I knew the consequences would be frightful, and much as I dreaded being caught, even that seemed better than causing an innocent person to suffer for kindness to me. A week had passed in terrible suspense, when my pursuers came into such close vicinity that I concluded they had tracked me to my hiding place. I flew out of the house and concealed myself in a thicket of bushes. There I remained in an agony of fear for 2 hours. Suddenly, a reptile of some kind seized my leg. In fright, I struck a blow which loosened its hold, but I could not tell whether I had killed it. It was so dark. I did not see what it was. I only knew it was something cold and slimy. The pain I felt soon indicated that the bite was poisonous. I was compelled to leave my place of concealment, and I groped my way back into the house. The pain had become intense, and my friend was startled by my look of anguish. I asked her to prepare a poultice of warm ashes and vinegar, and I applied it to my leg, which was already much swollen. The application gave me some relief, but the swelling did not abate. The dread of being disabled was greater than the physical pain I endured. My friend asked an old woman who doctored among the slaves what was good for the bite of a snake or a lizard. She told her to steep 12 coppers in vinegar overnight and apply the cankered vinegar to the inflamed part. Footnote. The poison of a snake is a powerful acid and is counteracted by powerful alkalis, such as potash, ammonia, and others. The Indians are accustomed to apply wet ashes or plunge the limb into strong lye. White men, employed to lay out railroads in snaky places, often carry ammonia with them as an antidote. Editor. Return to text. Page 124. I had succeeded in cautiously conveying some messages to my relatives. They were harshly threatened and despairing of my having a chance to escape. They advised me to return to my master, ask his forgiveness, and let him make an example of me. But such counsel had no influence with me. When I started upon this hazardous undertaking, I had resolved that come what would, there would be no turning back. Give me liberty or give me death was my motto. When my friend contrived to make known to my relatives the painful situation I had been in for 24 hours, they said no more about my going back to my master. Something must be done, and that speedily. But where to turn for help they knew not. God in his mercy raised up a friend in need. Among the ladies who were acquainted with my grandmother was one who had known her from childhood and always been very friendly to her. She had also known my mother and her children and felt interested for them. At this crisis of affairs, she called to see my grandmother, as she not infrequently did. She observed the sad and troubled expression of her face and asked if she knew where Linda was and whether she was safe. My grandmother shook her head without answering. "Come, Aunt Martha," said the kind lady, "tell me all about it. Perhaps I can do something to help you." The husband of this lady held many slaves and bought and sold slaves. She also held a number in her own name, but she treated them kindly and would never allow any of them to be sold. She was unlike the majority of slaveholders' wives. My grandmother looked earnestly at her. Something in the expression of her face said, "Trust me," and she did trust her. She listened attentively to the details of my story and sat thinking for a while. At last she said, "Aunt Martha, I pity you both. If you think there is any chance of Linda's getting to the free states, I will conceal her for a time. But first you must solemnly promise that my name shall never be mentioned. If such a thing should become known, it would ruin me and my family. No one in my house must know of it except the cook. She is so faithful that I would trust my own life with her, and I know she likes Linda. It is a great risk, but I trust no harm will come of it." Page 125. Get word to Linda to be ready as soon as it is dark, before the patrols are out. I will send the housemaids on errands, and Betty shall go to meet Linda. The place where we were to meet was designated and agreed upon. My grandmother was unable to thank the lady for this noble deed. Overcome by her emotions, she sank on her knees and sobbed like a child. I received a message to leave my friend's house at such an hour and go to a certain place where a friend would be waiting for me. As a matter of prudence, no names were mentioned. I had no means of conjecturing who I was to meet or where I was going. I did not like to move thus blindfolded, but I had no choice. It would not do for me to remain where I was. I disguised myself, summoned up my courage to meet the worst, and went to the appointed place. My friend Betty was there. She was the last person I expected to see. We hurried along in silence. The pain in my leg was so intense that it seemed as if I should drop, but fear gave me strength. We reached the house and entered unobserved. Her first words, "Honey, now you is safe. Dem devils ain't coming to search dis house. When I get you into Missus' safe place, I will bring some nice hot supper. I specs you need it after all dis skeetering." Betty's vocation led her to think eating the most important thing in life. She did not realize that my heart was much too full for me to care about supper. The mistress came to meet us and led me upstairs to a small room over her own sleeping apartment. "You will be safe here, Linda," she said. "I keep this room to store away things that are out of use. The girls are not accustomed to be sent to it, and they will not suspect anything unless they hear some noise. I always keep it locked, and Betty shall take care of the key. But you must be very careful, for my sake as well as your own, and you must never tell my secret, for it would ruin me and my family. I will keep the girls busy in the morning, that Betty may have a chance to bring you your breakfast, but it will not do for her to come to you again until night. I will come to see you sometimes. Keep up your courage. I hope this state of things will not last long. Betty came with the nice hot supper, and the mistress hastened downstairs to keep things straight until she returned. Page 126. How my heart overflowed with gratitude. Words choked in my throat, but I could have kissed the feet of my benefactress. For the deed of Christian womanhood, may God forever bless her. I went to sleep that night with the feeling that I was, for the present, the most fortunate slave in town. Morning came and filled my little cell with light. I thanked the Heavenly Father for this safe retreat. Opposite my window was a pile of feather beds. On top of these, I could lie perfectly concealed and command a view of the street through which Dr. Flint passed to his office. Anxious as I was, I felt a gleam of satisfaction when I saw him. Thus far, I had outwitted him, and I triumphed over it. Who can blame slaves for being cunning? They are constantly compelled to resort to it. It is the only weapon of the weak and oppressed against the strength of their tyrants. I was daily hoping to hear that my master had sold my children, for I knew who was on the watch to buy them. But Dr. Flint cared even more for revenge than he did for money. My brother William and the good aunt who had served in his family 20 years, and my little Benny and Ellen, who was a little over 2 years old, were thrust into jail as a means of compelling my relatives to give some information about me. He swore my grandmother should never see one of them again till I was brought back. They kept these facts from me for several days. When I heard that my little ones were in a loathsome jail, my first impulse was to go to them. I was encountering dangers for the sake of freeing them, and must I be the cause of their death? The thought was agonizing. My benefactress tried to soothe me by telling me that my aunt would take good care of the children while they remained in jail. But it added to my pain to think that the good old aunt, who had always been so kind to her sister's orphan children, should be shut up in prison for no other crime than loving them. I suppose my friends feared a reckless movement on my part, knowing, as they did, that my life was bound up in my children. I received a note from my brother, William. It was scarcely legible, and ran thus: "Wherever you are, dear sister, I beg of you not to come here. We are all much better off than you are. If you come, you will ruin us all." Page 127. They would force you to tell where you had been, or they will kill you. Take the advice of your friends, if not for the sake of me and your children, at least for the sake of those you would ruin. Poor William! He also must suffer for being my brother. I took his advice and kept quiet. My aunt was taken out of jail at the end of the month because Mrs. Flint could not spare her any longer. She was tired of being her own housekeeper. It was quite too fatiguing to order her dinner and eat it, too. My children remained in jail, where Brother William did all he could for their comfort. Betty went to see them sometimes and brought me tidings. She was not permitted to enter the jail, but William would hold them up to the grated window while she chatted with them. When she repeated their prattle and told me how they wanted to see their ma, my tears would flow. Old Betty would exclaim, "Lors, child, what you crying about? Them young'uns will kill you dead. Don't be so chicken-hearted. If you does, you will never get through this world." Good old soul! She had gone through the world childless. She had never had little ones to clasp their arms around her neck. She had never seen their soft eyes looking into hers. No sweet little voices had called her mother. She had never pressed her own infants to her heart with the feeling that even in fetters there was something to live for. How could she realize my feelings? Betty's husband loved children dearly and wondered why God had denied them to him. He expressed a great sorrow when he came to Betty with the tidings that Ellen had been taken out of jail and carried to Dr. Flint's. She had the measles a short time before they carried her to jail, and the disease had left her eyes affected. The doctor had taken her home to attend to them. My children had always been afraid of the doctor and his wife. They had never been inside of their house. Poor little Ellen cried all day to be carried back to prison. The instincts of childhood are true. She knew she was loved in the jail. Her screams and sobs annoyed Mrs. Flint. Before night, she called one of the slaves and said, "Here, Bill, carry this brat back to the jail. I can't stand her noise. If she would be quiet, I should like to keep the little